So, Bill, you had an interesting case fairly recently, didn't you?
I always do, and I keep bringing these sort of drug-related cases because I see so much polypharmacy in the population that we serve at Stony Brook. And for sure, they're complicated patients, but this one's relatively straightforward, although the consulting services didn't think so. So let me just run the case by you.
So that'd be, of course, our own Billy Mallon, who is one of the medical editors of Emergency Medical Abstracts, now part, of course, of the offering here on MRAP. And he recently moved to, go to the New York, go to the Stony Brook from LA County. We miss him dearly. But he's got a new sort of patient experience, and he's been bringing them back to us here on MRAP, talking to us a lot about particularly this issue of polypharmacy and drug reactions. And obviously he is chatting with our own SWOD that is Stuart, that is Cortex, that is a captain.
The case.
68-year-old woman had come to the emergency department 6 days before I saw her. She was in the emergency department for her initial visit at that time for about 12 hours. And her presentation was left lower quadrant pain with a change in her stooling pattern, but no blood in the stool. They proceeded to work her up. She had like a white count of 11.
Hang on 1 second, because you've just described every single member of my family around the holidays, over 50.
No, she's got a common problem, and indeed
yes,
it could be.
Yes.
So she came in at that time, and she got a CT scan, and her CT scan, I guess we would call it Hinchy 1A. There was no abscess or perf. She had obvious diverticulitis with some stranding, and it was actually, because I looked back at the CT when she came in 6 days later just to see what it looked like. It was there for sure. It wasn't like a made-up call. She had diverticulitis with some inflammatory changes around it, no free air.
I think it's pretty much become a standard to CT these in most places, hasn't it? And
the thing is elderly belly pain is so often offers you surprises. I think her clinical presentation could certainly have been managed clinically as diverticulitis and then empirically treated imaging.
And just to let people know,
I don't know many people who would do that.
Right. But people should know, I think, that there is an out there. I believe that the American College of Gastroenterology guidelines
the American Society of Colorectal Surgeons. It says that in a simple, straightforward case of this, no imaging is necessary.
Right. So you do have support there if you don't want to take that route. So that's important. But anyway, so she had the imaging. It showed something like a phlegmon or something like
some
a 1A.
She had stranding. She had obviously thickening of the wall and no free air. And it was pretty clear-cut diverticulitis.
Right.
And they did what you would think you would do with a person who did not look toxic, who had, a pretty much a normal white count, touch elevated. They managed her as an outpatient, and they started her on Cipro and Flagyl.
Right.
Usual stuff. 500 of Flagyl, Cipro BID, usual kinds of things. And they sent her home, where she complied. She was on assorted other medications, all the kinds of things you'd expect in a seventh decade of life kind of thing. She was on a baby aspirin, but she had no immunocompromised history, no any of that. She was on an antihypertensive. She was not a diabetic.
Right.
So off she goes, and everything's fine. And then 5.5 days later, she comes into the emergency department, and she's crazy.
Let me ask you something. Did she have any follow-up in the interim?
Nope.
So 5 days later, she comes in and she's acutely psychotic.
She's really kind of confused. She'll answer questions and she tells me that after starting on her medications, on the second day, she was unable to sleep. She complained of some nightmares. Then those extended into her sort of waking situation with what were pretty good descriptions of sort of hallucinations.
Right. This is all backed up by the family members
Members are there saying more or less, maybe the wrong term in view of her primary diagnosis, more or less that she lost her shit.
Yeah.
And she had no previous history of dementia, no previous history of psychosis, bipolar disorder, no psych history.
Yeah.
And over the course of the ensuing 3 to 4 days, she just got crazy.
Right. And when you said that she was losing her shit, you mean not in the diverticulitic way.
Not in the diverticular fashion.
Okay, very good.
In fact, her abdominal pain had improved. And
all that stuff got better.
Had improved, and things were doing better, but she had become crazy. And so when I saw her, she had normal vital signs, was afebrile. Her abdomen was non-tender. And then in terms of her mental status and neuro exam was completely intact and non-focal, except for the fact that her mood was off and she was irritable. She was manic. She hadn't slept for a couple of days. She was complaining of hallucinations without suicidal ideation, without religious reference, without paranoia. She was just had got progressively more manic. And so at first, when I saw her, I said to myself, does this look like meningitis? And so you do all or encephalitis. And so I did the rest of that stuff. She had no nuchal rigidity. She had no fever. She had no complaint of a headache. She had, you know, other than the recent diverticular problem, which had resolved, no other obvious source of infection, no urinary symptoms, no GYN symptoms, no cough, sore throat, earache, no dental infection. Everything else seemed fine.
Was she on any anticoagulation?
She was on a baby aspirin a day.
Right.
And she was on an antihypertensive, and she was on, you know, vitamins and all of the usual things. But she was, for her age, pretty healthy.
Right.
Of note, she was also on a low-dose statin, and that's important because people can get crazy on statins, but she'd been on that for many, many years. And the new medications as of, you know, 5 days earlier were the Cipro and the Flagyl.
Mm-hmm.
And I have seen patients before who went crazy on Cipro. And it was my thinking that maybe this was antibiotic related. And so we have out there this whole diagnosis that I think is underappreciated in emergency medicine and probably underrecognized called antibiomania.
Antibiomania.
I don't want to be the same as everyone else. That's why I take antibiotics.
I'll tell you what's wrong with you. You're schizophrenic, that's what you are.
Them antibiotics he's taking.
Get away from me.
They call it antibiomania.
And I think she had it. Now, the medicine team that admitted her really wanted to know why I hadn't tapped her and what was the rest of the neuro workup and could we get neurology or psych involved? And I kept trying to convince them, and I even printed down a couple papers about antibiomania, of which they were none too impressed
right.
with my academic rigor.
And so I can tell you that in our Emergency Medical Abstract database, February 2017, we actually have an article that talks about this. The article itself is actually from the Israeli Medical Association Journal from August of 2016, and it was a case of clarithromycin-induced mania after triple antibiotic therapy to eradicate H. pylori. And they do a little review and say, you know what, this is pretty common with clarithromycin and with fluoroquinolones, so think about it in the elderly patient who started sort of new antibiotics and has gone kooky. But the question is, how confident are you? Should you be doing some other type of workup? Billy goes on.
I did yield and get a head CT on her.
That right.
was normal. And her workup that I did, this is the workup I did for her, head CT negative. I did a TSH to make sure this wasn't, you know, storm
right.
or, you know, that kind of thing. It was negative.
Right.
She had a white count of 6, a lactate of 1, a chem 7 that was normal. And I was ready to stop there.
Okay. Well, I think it's important, Billy, for us to point out that not everyone is Billy Mallon. But thank God for them, right?
Thank God for them. That's all I can say. But just the visage alone is a cross to bear.
But, you know, we have to obviously come out and recognize that what these medicine docs are saying is absolutely appropriate. I mean, I asked about the anticoagulation because I figure there's a possibility that this is something structural in the brain. If there's a bleed, that's something that really has to be eliminated as people get older and they come in altered, you know.
Right. So the question is, did she need an MR and an MRA
right.
and those other studies in addition to the CT that we did?
Yeah, I think the CT is sort of is probably a minimum in a case like that. And in terms of the meningitis stuff, I mean, it's a very legitimate argument that, you know, she's already on antibiotics. She doesn't have any of the signs of meningitis and stuff. And so I think that's fair enough. But just statistically, I think it's very, very reasonable, unless you've got really good backup and support for mm-hmm. your diagnosis, to go ahead and finish that basic altered
workup. Right. So meningitis doesn't usually cause mania. Now, encephalitis can. And so there were thoughts that maybe really what should be done is the LP and looking for, you know, an encephalitis, a viral encephalitis type picture. But for me, again, and this clinical reliance can get you in trouble as well as take you to the promised land. But she didn't seem to have an infection, and the timing of her symptoms seemed to pair nicely with the antibiotics. And the antibiotics that she was on, both of them are associated with antibiomania. And had she anything of infectious hint, I would have felt stronger about it.
You know, Billy, I have to admit that before today, I didn't really know what you were talking about when you said, hey, I wanted to talk to you about antibiomania. I didn't know what that was. I thought that might have been like a Who movie that I missed or something like that.
Malinism, a merging of two words that didn't belong together.
Yeah, or like a bioterror thing or something like that. I don't know.
It's sweeping the nation. Antibiomania.
But anyway, so I found this article in the Journal of Clinical Psychopharmacology from 2002, and I've got the abstract here, and you have it too. So this is the origin of it. It's Dr. Abuesh, Stone, and Hobbs in 2002, and they were the first one to coin this term, antibiomania.
I like the name because it tells you what you need to know, and it summarizes it quite nicely. Now, this review that you pulled is of 21 reports of antimicrobial-induced mania that were found in the literature. And I think it's probably very underreported. I suspect a lot of people have this problem and they finish up their antibiotics and it sort of resolves and it might not be that serious. I've seen several people come to the emergency department with sleep disturbances on Cipro and complaining of weird dreams. It reminded me a lot of the whole story when I was at the Gorgas School of Tropical Medicine in Peru, when we had all the discussions about mefloquine, which is, of course, another antimicrobial that is
anti-malarial,
somewhat infamous for causing people to have a psychotic breakdown when they're obviously in a foreign land. Not a great place to become psychotic when you're in the Congo. You know, this is not the time.
You know,
and
let me ask you. So is there something in terms of antibiomania? Is it really a manic presentation as opposed to being altered specifically that is associated with these antibiotics?
It really is a mania. That's the thing about it. And that was what she had that really, and she started with the sleep disturbances. So the sleep disturbances seem to be part of this. No one really knows the mechanism. And in fact, in this abstract, they note that further research clearly is required to determine the incidence and how it happens. But let's go over what they found in terms of where this happens. So they had like 21 reports that they found. And the most common drug reported is clarithromycin. And this happens typically when someone's put on clarithro for a Helicobacter pylori treatment. So you take an older person who might have had some ulcer disease or bleeding. They get scoped. They got some things like, oh, well, you're H. pylori biopsy positive. We need to eliminate this. And then they take an older person who might have a little bit of dementia anyway, and they're on too many meds. And then you throw this in the mix and they get manic.
Right. And in your case, what was the follow-up? What happened with her?
So it resolved over a couple of days.
Right.
No specific infectious cause was found. She left the hospital like 3 days later in her normal state of health and normal baseline. Although they urged me to tap her and stuff, which I refused to do, they also followed along and didn't tap her.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
After giving you sh**?
After giving me this, that didn't happen.
Wow.
And then the other antibiotics that are noted in this review, there were some implicating isoniazid. I remember when I had my LTB infection, I was PPD positive, changed from negative to positive. I took the isoniazid. And I had this real problem with my arms falling asleep at night, you know, which is a well-known neurotoxic peripheral nerve neuropathy finding. And I was taking the vitamin B6 and all that stuff to prevent it.
And so we have a whole bunch of antibiotics that can cause this. And maybe some people haven't seen it, but probably more people out there have seen steroid psychosis, which is very similar, right? Because it tends towards the mania. I can remember the first time I put an older COPD patient in Toronto on a big whack of steroids. And the next day I was on the ward, like dancing the polka with him until, you know, my boss had to come and explain, you know, that's not normal behavior. He's totally manic and that's the steroids.
And I think that the reason that part of the steroid discussion is important, because as we've looked at things like pharyngitis and croup and kids and dropping the doses down, it matters.
Right.
It matters. I mean, if you hate a parent, send the kid home on high dose steroids because her next... You know, it'll take a day, but a day after that kid leaves the emergency room with their asthma, that you send them out on high-dose steroids, by the way, never proven to be better than lower-dose steroids.
Right,
when you send that kid on the high dose of steroids, that kid's going to go crazy and drive everyone in that household absolutely wild as the kid escalates under this sort of steroid mania. Now, the steroid mania is way, way, way more frequent than the antibiomania. So that I think you can almost expect it. If you send a kid on high dose steroids, that kid's going to be hyper at the very least for a few days and possibly reach a manic stage if you extend it longer. So there are a bunch of drugs that can do this kind of stuff that are not antibiotics. I remember I was sent home after my motorcycle crash with a ropivacaine pump. And so the neuro complications of all those anesthetics are kind of interesting. So there's, you know, lidocaine toxicity. And I can clearly remember, because I'm old, back in the days when anyone had a PVC, we gave them 100 of lidocaine and started them on a drip.
Everyone after an MI.
Yep.
Yeah.
And we started. And then if they had more PVCs, we gave them another 100 of lidocaine as a bolus and then increased it to 2. And I remember being on the CCU in my intern year, and you would admit this lady who was so sweet and in her 60s and 70s or whatever it was. And, you know, she looked fine. She wasn't having much of the pain, but the PVC, so you increase the lidocaine drip, and she would turn into a freaking witch overnight.
That's right.
And then you would turn the lidocaine off, and she'd start, you know, and she would become pleasant again and start knitting. But the lidocaine could turn a sweet little old grandma into the Tasmanian devil overnight. which was something that as an intern you got to see because, you know, everyone started them on, you know, increase the drip to 2, give her another half bolus, and then they all go home and leave you as the intern there while she turns into a stark, raving, mad woman. And you'd be like, and I didn't realize it. And then you just, you know, so I had to learn about that. But there's all of those systemic toxicities with all those local anesthetics. And the reason I bring this to our attention, because I've been using more and more bupivacaine. In my practice now, I use bupivacaine probably 3 to 4 times as often as I use just lidocaine. And bupivacaine, interestingly, has a much higher incidence of these neurotoxic symptoms than lidocaine. So anyway, what I'm pointing out here is that antibiomania, I think, is under-recognized. And it may be from as little as sleep disturbances and nightmares extending all the way up to full-blown mania. It resolves without specific treatment. Sometimes they get put on a psych med or something to help them with it. But it's out there.
Okay, so Billy, I think it's really neat. We've kind of developed a theme here over the past few sessions, which was you've been pointing out some very, very important drug-related effects that really come into play in the emergency department. We don't want to give anyone the impression that we're shortchanging the basic workup of all these serious things, but we've just developed quite a list. And so,
and it's a new experience for me at Stony Brook because I see people who are on so many more medications. It's not uncommon for me to see people on 10 to 15 medications and they're getting started on some and taken off some. And so one of the things that has really become important to me is the temporal association between medication changes and their new problem. And I'm probably missing as many as I'm finding.
Okay, so just in a way of summary for people, you've put together a nifty little list of some of the most important antibiotic-related side effects that we should be aware of. So let her rip. Let us know what those are.
Sure, and I don't want to take exclusive credit for this. In fairness, in the emergency medical abstracts 2 or 3 years ago, we actually did 20 or 30 papers on the topic that was originally put together by Rick Bucata. So this is that list plus a little extension. So let's go through them. So one that I think many emergency physicians are aware of is QT prolongation with antibiotics like azithro and some of the fluoroquinolones and others. 2, tenosynovitis. We all know about the ruptured tendons. Again, we're talking about the fluoroquinolones. 3, antibiotic-induced diarrhea and the exploding epidemic of C. diff. Maybe exploding, not the right term, but that one's out there. 4, Stevens-Johnson's and DRESS.
Oh, can you remind everyone what DRESS is again?
So DRESS is drug reaction with eosinophilia and systemic symptoms.
And when should we be looking for that?
Well, it sometimes seems to overlap with what people are thinking of as Redman. They may have some of that kind of things with a rash, might have abdominal pain with liver function abnormalities. So they're sicker than that. And then when you look at their CBC, oftentimes they have an eosinophil count of, you know, 15-20%, definitely up.
Right. And those patients might also be getting a broader workup and initially thought to have other things.
That takes us to 5 on my list, which is hyperkalemia and Bactrim, which we're using all the time now for skin and soft tissue infections, is known to cause hyperkalemia and is a surprise. And I think that sometimes goes unrecognized. So with antibiotics, there are a whole host of drug-drug interactions where the starting of an antibiotic changes the metabolism of another drug. Some drugs become higher in level, some drugs become lower in level. And so that's a whole complex category on its own.
So 2 really important examples there, Billy, would be, say, for anti-epileptics. You know, you send a patient home on a new antibiotic and all of a sudden they start seizing a bunch because their levels have become subtherapeutic. And of course, Coumadin, where they could quickly get out of range depending on what antibiotic they're on. So you really need to check. 7 was altered mental status.
7, mental status and the antibiomania.
We just talked about. Okay. And then 8?
Hypoglycemia. So there are a whole bunch of antibiotics that give hypoglycemia. So the antimalarial agents, when you start someone on a quinine product, you got to watch for it. Pentamidine, which is used in HIV-positive patients sometimes. The sulfa drugs have an overlap with the sulfonylureas and give you a sort of like an oral hypoglycemic effect.
Right.
And so you got to worry about that. There's the change in effect of oral contraceptive pills and the infamous lawsuit in California for wrongful life.
Right. Exactly.
But you should remind patients that, you know, when they're on antibiotics, they should use barrier methods, even though the only antibiotic that I believe that's ever really been shown to do that is rifampin.
Rifampin, yeah.
Yeah. Next complication is anytime you start someone on antibiotics who is potentially got fungal infections, you got to worry about overgrowth and problems with that. And that's really common complaint among women who are started on this, who get
yeast infections and
absolutely
the like.
Yep. Pilosophagitis. So yep. Some antibiotics really are notorious for this. Doxycycline is probably the most common one involved here, but there are others there. And I remember many years ago.
Painful.
Well, I saw a 17-year-old girl who for some reason had thought doxycycline was the way to go as an antimalarial. And so she was taking it every night before she went to bed. And sometimes she forgot to drink enough water to wash it down. And when she came back for her trip, she had this horrific substernal chest pain. And it turned out she was perfed.
Oh, my goodness.
She had an esophageal perf, ooh, full thickness.
Wow. Yeah, but it can be awful, that pill esophagitis. I mean, it often presents as like, hey, is this a dissection? It's going to be very severe.
Anyway, so this is just by no means a comprehensive list, but something I've been running across more and more. And we always talk about the big problem with antibiotics is antimicrobial resistance.
Right.
And that the reason to be a better steward of antibiotics is because we'd like to have, you know, minimize resistance changes in the organisms we're treating. My point is there's a whole other cascade of these antibiotic-related side effects, and I think they're frequently missed. And the reason I wanted to talk about the antibiomania today is because I know I've seen more of this than I diagnosed. And I'm sure that I've worked people up, admitted them for it, and not recognized it, or sent them to psych and not recognized it. So it's an interesting category of thing, and it's out there, and I just had a recent case.
All right, man. Well, thanks so much, Billy, for sharing that with us. And go back to New York.
I will go back to New York, where I just received a picture from Rolando Valenzuela, who lives at the frat house, showing 4 inches of snow on my deck.
Enjoy.
I will.
Summary.
So antibiomania. The ability of some antimicrobials, particularly in the elderly, to produce mania. It seems there is a never-ending list of drugs that in the elderly can produce psychiatric issues, sleep disturbances, depression, mania. So be careful. Be careful out there. Now, do not, you know, Billy's Billy. He's a 30, 40-year vet in this stuff. He's very famous. For the residents out there, for the newbies out there, don't be going diagnosing sort of new-onset psychosis in grandma as, oh, it's just her amoxicillin. Don't do that. But keep this in mind. Think about it. Before you get too busy, ask the question, hang on a second. Could this be a drug-induced mania or a psychosis? What is a reasonable workup given this possibility? And if in doubt, of course, you're going to be aggressive. You're going to work up for other treatable things. But if you don't think about this, you'll never make the diagnosis. And since the elderly are on an increasing number of drugs that can make them crazy, you should be thinking about it all the time. Squadron, Malin, Legends.